Just before we get started here with the podcast episode, here's another invitation to every single person listening. If you haven't yet signed up for the Less But Better course, it's completely free. It has taken months to design. It comes with a workbook that you can print up and work through, a series of 10 lessons, and also a 30-day email course. You don't get an email every day, thank goodness, that's overwhelming. But you do get one every 3 or 4 days that supports the ongoing journey. Actually, it's not even that, it's where to start. If you have ever wondered where to start with essentialism and with effortless, this course is the answer. It's completely free. It takes 10 seconds to sign up for. You go to gregmckeown.com, you scroll down a little way, you sign up there. 10 seconds, you're done. And that's the place to start. With that, let's get to this episode. So there's one other idea here that I thought was, I mean, it's interesting, not because we haven't heard it before, but the idea a few years ago, you gave your colleagues a challenge. Okay, one night a week, completely unplug. And, you know, that is no phones, no iPads, no computers. And you're going to have an analog evening. You instituted Tuesday night, so tech-free Tuesday. I got lots of questions about it. Do you still do it? That's my first question.
Yes, I do.
Do you? This week you did it. From what time to what time?
We do dinner time until the following morning. So.
Oh, do you? Mm-hmm. So it's like in the same way that breakfast comes from break the fast.
Yes.
You are breaking the fast. You are entering a fast.
Mm-hmm.
When you start that meal. How old are your children?
They're 4, 2, and 1.
So you can make that choice for them. Okay, so that's fine. But then you and your husband also do it. Did you cheat a little bit on Tuesday?
No, I didn't. I'm actually, now that I've seen the benefit of doing it one night a week, I'm pretty adamant about. I already don't use technology from about 8:39 until an hour after I wake up the following morning. So I already have that daily habit now because of the benefit I saw from doing it one night a week. So even on the nights that aren't Tuesday, that might mean after my kids go to bed, doing some email or looking at social media between 7 and 8:30, but I still have a bedtime for my phone.
Okay, so I'm jokingly wanting to ask the question like, yeah, and what else do you lie about? I was just saying that as a joke, but I am curious, what percentage of the time do you successfully not check your phone for the first hour of the day? What percentage of the last week did you do that?
Obviously, when I'm traveling and stuff, you know, that which doesn't happen very often, like in 2 weeks ago, I was traveling. So I was in a hotel room and woke up and didn't have my regular routine. But I would say when I'm home, like 80 to 90%. And it's not because I'm so good at keeping that. It's because I've set up systems, which I talk about in the book. Like, as you, I'm sure, know, you can't just trust yourself to, oh, my phone's next to my bed. I'm not going to look at it for the first hour. It's because it's so far away that it's actually more of a hassle for me to go look at it than it is for me to stay unplugged for the first hour of my day. So I almost trick myself into having to do it.
Well, you just make it harder to do it.
Right.
And a little inconvenience, a little friction goes a long way.
Right.
So how would you say it? You want a system that makes it as effortless as possible to do what's essential and as challenging as possible to do what's non-essential. And then that system, you know, you build that system, you keep tweaking it over time, and you are really doing something that, you know, your past self is doing something, not just for your future self tomorrow morning, but for morning after morning after morning.
Exactly.
What other systems do you have in place to help push out this extremely consuming, you know, technology tentacles?
So I have actual, as if I'm a teenager that has control on my phone of what I can open at what times. I've set that up for myself, saying I'm not able to open any app that is not essential. So no social media, no LinkedIn, nothing that is not what I would want to be focused on. I have that locked on my phone.
No YouTube.
No YouTube, nothing that is not something I would need, like a app that I use for my to-do list or email during the day. So I have those locked to the point where I truly cannot get in them without a code, and only my husband has the code. So that's, again, a system that I've set up. So when you're asking what percentage of the time, that's 100% of the time, unless occasionally I'm cooking dinner from a recipe from Instagram and I'll say, can you unlock my phone so I can screenshot it? My husband will give me 1 minute, truly 1 minute on the app to open it, screenshot it. So it is, again, a system that I have so that, and the good thing is now I don't ever find myself opening my phone and looking for social media apps, because I've had that for so long that my brain knows it's not an option unless it's 7 to 8:30 on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, mm-hmm. Saturday. So
yeah, you and you chose them yourself, so you're not feeling controlled, or at least in theory you're not, because you're just being, how would we say, agentic about it. You are, yes, using your agency in it, but you're building your agency into a system to push back. I mean, this, any other systems?
I mean, sleeping with my phone completely downstairs. We already talked about that. Having an alarm.
The phone goes downstairs, you know, so it's not just in another room. It's a,
right. It's
different
farther.
Story.
Exactly. So am I going to wake up in the morning and walk all the way downstairs instead of having coffee, which is up in my room, to look at my email? No, I'm too tired to do that. Having an alarm set on my phone nightly for when to put it to bed so that, you know, if I am using it and get distracted, oh, look, it's the phone's bedtime. You know, I don't pick up my phone when I'm in the morning and part of my morning routine. Instead, I have a wearable device so that if I have anything urgent come up, but I can't waste time on a wearable device. You're not scrolling on anything, you know, when you're getting notifications. I see.
So you're using it. So you do have a digital device on you though.
After the first hour.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
So you're still not having to get pulled right into a phone, you know, because it's pretty hard to do anything from a wearable phone.
I also, you know, when I'm in like this meeting, I pulled up this meeting and I closed all of my other tabs. So I do one tab working so that when I'm focused on a deck, I'm not seeing emails, I'm not seeing chats. I do a lot to customize what comes in. So I don't get notifications for every email. I get notifications for five people that I've deemed as important, or certain words like urgent that are important. So I think, you know, it's about customizing, again, same as setting up that schedule, getting ahead of your future self who's going to engage with anything that's there, and only letting you see what you need to.
Well, what's the most valuable technical hack that either the most valuable to you personally, or the thing that others that you've shared with have given you feedback about? You know, like, this one has disproportionately been useful.
For this topic, for digital detox, I think setting up a label in your email that is indicative of your VIP or your most important, and really keeping that small. So 3 to 5 people or 3 topics, not, oh, sometimes, you know, basically if I was out on a plane, I would still want to open and see this right away. It's something I really need to see. And so creating one label that indicates all of those, that hack allows you to see in your inbox when those things come in. So if you are in between meetings and you just look, you're able to see it. But also it allows you to then create notifications based on that label. So now that label becomes, again, it's kind of defining those top 3 priorities. And then in this sense, you're associating that with digital interruption and saying, I only want to see when emails from that label hit my inbox. And that's what I want to be notified about. So people get a lot of anxiety saying, I'm just going to turn off all notifications, or I'm not, because that feels too extreme. So it's that safety net of saying, I'll still see what I need to when I need to, but I won't see that email that can easily wait until tomorrow afternoon.
Are you familiar with the brick technology?
No.
I think they would probably describe themselves as a startup still, but I was given the lead from Stephen Covey VI, I think is technically. So his father, Stephen M. R. Covey, his grandfather, Stephen R. Covey, and so on, right? But he's been using it. And so I bought the technology for myself as well, and for a couple of members of my family. It's a little, I don't know, it's like a matchbox size device, and it lives in a single location. You can take it with you, it's magnetized, but you set up profiles within the app and you take your phone and you touch it to the brick, and this blanks out whatever apps you don't want under those circumstances. So you could have a data app, or you can have a working app, or you could have a, you could even have a sitting down to dinner app, not app, but setting. And so you know, and the only way you can then change it is to take your phone and go back to the brick, touch it again to get permission to come out of it. And so I found it very easy to set up, very low tech. It sort of has the feeling, even though it's not, it has the feeling of analog. And I've really enjoyed the experimentation with it so far. But it's, so, you know, thank you to Stephen, who may be listening to this conversation now. But anything else? Now, answer the question that you thought I was asking, which is across everything, not just digital detox, but just across everything, what do you think the most useful tactic is to being able to live in an uptime way?
I think if we're talking like in the weeds tactic, I certainly think the setup of email to mimic your laundry has been the thing that time and time again, people have come back to me and said, this stuck with me. I've stayed this for 9 years. I continue. It clears brain space in my head. So thinking of your dryer, like your inbox, you don't pull out one thing, address it, walk, you know, fold it, walk it all the way up two flights. You don't, you don't pull out your pair of pants and say, this is still wet. I'll mark as unread, throw it back in for my future self to deal later. End of the day, I'm just going to start this whole thing over and deal with it tomorrow. So a lot of people do their email that way. They pick and choose. They do one thing at a time. They match some socks before they pull out. You know, it's just not systematic and it clutters our brain. You don't open your dryer 15 times a day when you don't plan on doing anything with it. You know, so that's how we're doing our email. So instead, you want to think of email like laundry, where you empty the dryer, which is what I call inbox zero. Does not mean everything has been folded. It just means I took it all out and put it in baskets to set future me up for what I need to do with that next. Things I need to fold, things I need to hang, and things I need to read, or, you know, respond, revisit, read. And then I actually schedule time to do those baskets all sequentially so that I'm batching them and getting in the energy of read, 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 matching it where my energy is for the day. I'm not wasting primo focus time on reading industry articles, which is what happens if you're just kind of fishing in your inbox. So, and then I always know where that pink shirt is because I've separated it, whether I folded it or not. And just having more of an approach of, you know, sorting is separate than responding is separate than reading and not mixing them all up. And so I feel like that is a mindset shift, but also a structure shift of how you're actually looking at your email and managing it. And if for some reason, people totally understand laundry in that way and do not do their email that way. So I think that one thing is something that really shifts for people, you know, how they stay focused and on top of their email.
This episode is sponsored by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. So whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person point-of-sale system, whenever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. So sell more with less effort, thanks to Shopify Magic, which is your AI-powered all-star. In my experience with every business that I have built, including this podcast, there are breakthrough moments, and those moments are often the result of finding the right partner. And I think that's a way to think about Shopify. Because no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/greg, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/greg now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/greg.
Yeah, I really like that. And I mean, one can argue that in a sense, you can argue, I think, that email is like the least prioritized productivity tool that's ever been created. I mean, it is actually quite shocking to me that the absence of deep prioritization logic within email. So, of course, what you've just described is an improvement of just literally taking one item out of the dryer at many, many times a day and going back and forth and back and forth. Mm-hmm. So clearly that's better. But the underlying logic of email, I think, is so shocking in a sense. You know, it's just, okay, well, the thing that gets the highest attention is the latest thing that came in.
Like, yeah.
Most technologies still, but maybe you found something that I don't know about, but most, it doesn't allow you just even to move your emails up and down, like in a priority order.
Gmail has priority inbox, which basically takes into account how you're interacting with emails. So do you open emails always from this person? Is it sent directly to you versus the whole company? So it does some of that sorting for you. But
yeah, but that's not what I want. I want to be able to move email number 22 to number one.
To number one.
I don't think it's a technically hard thing to do. It just isn't embedded in it.
No, because it's all based on wanting you to look at the most recent, which is that. That's a good point.
Latest in is your highest priority.
Yes.
I'm not kidding. If this could be changed as a result of this conversation and we actually get with the programmers, I'm not kidding. It would make a massive difference in the world to simply allow people within Gmail alone, just that single platform,
to reorder.
To be able to simply reorder email. Not have to put it into the separate baskets. I understand the point, but to not just to be able to prioritize even within that separate basket, to be able to go, here's the top item. When I get back to this basket, that is the first item I want to fold. Mm-hmm. To be able to do that in the main inbox, I think it's such a technically doable thing. But where I think it takes me, at least in my thinking, is the degree to which technology is built upon assumptions that technologists held when they created them. Right. And so everything that we can say about the benefit of automated systems, it is also true. The opposite is also true. So it's not just, you know, I've worked with Silicon Valley for the last 15 years. I think I've worked with every major tech company and many of the minor ones, and of course, including Google multiple times. And there is still a kind of drinking of the Kool-Aid in Silicon Valley, by which I mean they only think about the asymmetric advantage. In general, it's still seen as, well, we're going to change the world. It's going to be so great. We're going to do this great thing. And it's like, yeah, great. But what about the asymmetric disadvantage? That is the unintended consequences of what's being done. And you just think about email itself. It's amazing. I mean, of course, there's advantage to having email. But for 20 years, it's been our primary productivity tool. And you can't prioritize within it other than kind of around the periphery. So, okay, you're gonna help us actually
get
this
fixed. I'll take
that
back.
we need to find, imagine what would happen if you could do it. Because then the competitors would have to do it because it'd just be such a distinct advantage. And now everyone would be able to actually just prioritize their email in the same way as you can prioritize a to-do list. Imagine if every list you ever make, a to-do list you ever make, you couldn't prioritize.
Yeah.
That would be so weird. Isn't that the first thing you do? You make the list and then you go, let's prioritize it. Which ones do I really matter next? Mm-hmm. Can't do it with email. Okay.
It's good feedback.
No, but I don't feel it from you. I don't feel
I agree.
You. I know you hear me, but I don't feel you saying, I'm going to help find who can fix this.
I promise you, I'm going to take that piece of feedback to a person who can make a difference.
Who can actually do it. Can they fix it?
You know, that's up to them. I'm not the engineer on Gmail. So.
Do you want to CC me so I can help be a second witness?
Yes, I will. I have
public commitment here. I'm not kidding. I would sign up for that in a heartbeat. That is a clear yes. The idea of making that single change would be so valuable.
I think where one of the thoughts comes is just that email is one piece of your overall action. So it's so something like our tasks product does allow you to do that. And it assumes that you're adding tasks from places like meetings that you're in or chat, which has become super popular as a place for instant, you know, email is kind of the old way of getting all of your actions. So if you're able to reorder your email, it's still not taking into account action items that you have from lots of other platforms. So I think
that is spoken like somebody who lives inside of G Suite and trains and teaches people on YouTube how to use specific functionality within it.
Yeah, but I think, don't you agree that if you have actions, if you took an action from our conversation today and I didn't send you an email about it, your email can't be your complete to-do list. It's only a piece of it.
Believe me, that's 100% true. But in practical terms, people use email as their to-do list. That's a huge strategic error. But people do it. You know, that's why.
Yeah.
What are they checking on the phone in the morning? I know it's not just email, but it definitely includes email.
Right.
Email, and then any text came in, check the messaging thing, maybe check social media, like, because there's a whole set of things that people go through their little system, their digital system. And so I'm not suggesting that that is ideal. I'm suggesting it is the default.
It's the way. Yes.
Well, I don't think was email, or of course, as a subset of that, Gmail ever supposed to become the primary means of communication or execution inside of organizations or society at large? No one ever thought that that's how it would suddenly function. And then you take email and you shove it onto mobile devices. Of course, it's been we're like almost probably 10 years since that shift took place, maybe a little longer even than 10 years now. Well, that's terrible. You know, because now a tool that was designed for at least a laptop size space and to be able to write something properly is now being turned into almost a texting machine. Mm-hmm. So people are using it in that way as well. Anyway,
I don't think we connected with our future selves on how to use email, to use it and how to set it up. And like you said, I think even when I coach people and they're still foldering things away, that's still because they're thinking of a file system. So I think sometimes we don't always, they're thinking a paper used to come on my desk. I used to have to put that paper in a folder. So I should do the same with my email versus using the ability to search a giant pile of that. And so I think, a lot of people just haven't, we don't always catch up with the technology on the best ways to use it.
Well, yeah, you can liken this to radio, right? Like when radio first came into existence, it was just theater that was being broadcast by audio. And then television looked just like radio that you could see. Mm-hmm. It takes a while for people to use the new technology to discover what it is independent of what the thing was before. But I still stand by this fundamental idea with email that it has been robust. It has survived. It continues to survive. And yes, it's less used now by young people coming into the workplace. It is used far less. I mean, texting is used more. Mm-hmm. Messaging, yes, is used definitely more because it didn't exist years ago in a serious way. Nevertheless, email continues to just have its march. I mean, talk about like a zombie productivity tool.
Yes.
And so we still have to do this basic thing to it. I'm looking forward to that, ironically, that email that I'm going to be CC'd on to see if we can't actually do something about this. I have talked about this all over the world.
Okay.
And I haven't till now really seriously thought about actually going to the different tech companies and saying, fix it. But now we're going to start. It's going to be your new 20% project.
Sounds good.
Let's fix Gmail for the world. Give us the final word. No, I'm going to give you the final question.
Okay.
The premise that technology is built upon assumptions is sort of obvious, but also sort of terrifying. Because we just receive the tools as they have been created, and then we use them or don't use them. I would say pretty unaware that the builders had specific intents, or there was, there's thinking that went behind it. I have asked, although I'm not trying to be rude about it, would would you want, would I want Mark Zuckerberg to be my relationship coach? And I'm not trying to be harsh about that to him personally. I'm just saying, well, maybe I wouldn't. Maybe that wouldn't really, maybe that's not his core competence. Well, if that's not, and Instagram and so on is built on top of a whole set of assumptions, some of which he brought to the table originally and now exists invisibly, affecting how people communicate, how people work together and so on, and causing many, many unintended consequences, we assume unintended. And so the question, coming back to you, I'm going to make it one more statement. I want your response to it. It's sort of a favorite question I've put to a couple of guests recently with very different responses. So here it is. The device in your pocket is not a phone. It is a $3 trillion military grade, connection stealing, orienting, addictive producing machine, and we're no match for it. True or false?
I would say false, because I believe that whether it's a tool, whether it's a device, or whether it's your time, your intention is your only power that you carry. And so if you are applying intention to the way you use that device, to the way that you use your time, all of those things become your control. So as I mentioned, taking the time to set up that system for myself, being locked out of those apps, that was me applying intention to a device that now works for me, not against me. And I think a lot of people forget that no tool is going to solve all your problems. People are looking for the hottest new productivity tool. No device is going to be your biggest problem. I think that it's always about how you are using your own intention, your own systems within all of those things that makes the biggest difference in your overall well-being and your productivity.
I heard two things from you there. One was something like this. Well, the device in my pocket isn't that. You know, like it may be that, you didn't really address that, but it may be that for other people, but it isn't for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I have had high agency about this. I have been agentic about this. I have put the phone in its place. I've put mm-hmm. the device in its place. I have studied the choices available to me from a very specific technical perspective over these last, you know, 14-ish years. Now for me, it is possible living it, and I'm doing it. And I'm doing it more often than I'm not doing it because the systems are in place. So that addresses the we're no match for it, because you're saying, well, we can be, but we can make these deliberate choices, which I like. I love that response. The question still lingers, is that what it is for lots of people, for most people, for billions of people?
I can't speak to millions of people. You know, I only can speak to myself. I'm a big proponent of you are only in control of yourself. And so I think that, you know, even with my coaching, people say to me, well, there's a pandemic. How am I supposed to get anything done? Or everything's working against me, or I have a new team, or I have a new manager, and all of these things you're saying, but I have all these situations that I'm supposed to believe in that are out there, and you know, they're all raining down on me. All I can focus on, all that we all can focus on, is that own umbrella in a storm. So, you know, you can spend time lamenting about the storm, or you can spend time building that foolproof umbrella, that place for yourself to really have that intention. So I think that what you're talking about is the storm. Like, what is the big intention? How is it working out there? And I think my focus has always been your own personal intention, which is why the book says personal productivity.
It's a lovely metaphor, and it's a lovely response. And I really genuinely do like it. Because, of course, what we can do in life is focus on what we can do something about, and that mm-hmm. gives us more power, or we can focus on what we can't do anything about, and that disempowers us. So at the individual level, that aligns with me, and I can like it and agree with you. And at the same time, the only thing I still feel like pushing back on is using that metaphor of the weather. Some things are not randomly happening, right? So let's say the weather is randomly happening, or at least in a sense that we really have so little control over it, that it's close to randomness. the technology weather isn't random. You know, people are making, technologists choose to build tools incentivize addiction.
I think you don't think
that's true.
Well, I think you could say that about advertising 100 years ago. You could say these ads are built to speak to your self-worth and to get you to buy this product. Like, I think that you know, that could be argued for so many things that you are like
cigarettes in the 50s.
Right. It's like the marketing. I think there's two types of people. There's people who say, I smoke because of these ads, or people who say, I have chosen not to smoke, you know?
Okay, but you're still, here's what you're doing, which I don't mind at all, but I just want to point out that I think you're doing it, which is you're shifting the conversation back to the person listening to this right now can make the choices they can make. They do not have to feel disempowered by anything other people are doing. You know, a person can choose not to smoke, even if there's a system of tobacco industry that's selling certain things and it's pushing a certain agenda. And it's, you know, I mean, we could go back into all the things that were done and all the things that were being said. You can still choose not to smoke. That's what you're saying. Yes. But as somebody who's semi-spokesperson for Google,
I think I'm right? not,
I mean, you're still
I'm
working
not
for them as you do this
speaking
book.
On behalf of, yeah, like, okay. I'm my focus is personal productivity. And so, like, when I'm working with our product teams, which I do, I'm not a spokesperson for Google as a whole and how they are treating devices, et cetera. But I would say that I am working with our product teams and carrying these principles. So, for example, when we created Focus Time in Google Calendar, I was in all of those discussions and suggested and supported that notifications would be automatically muted during that time. So that is an example of saying, okay, when people want to focus, how are we and our products enabling them to do that in a way that is not interrupt and, you know, focused on actually zoning in? So that really is my focus. And that's the lens that I've taken to those things.
Mm-hmm. Laura, you have just sophisticatedly made my argument for me. Because what you just said is a person with a, well, I'll call it this for obvious reasons, with an essentialist mindset who then creates technology will create it differently. That's precisely the point I'm making. And somebody who has a non-essentialist mindset, either by default, because many, many people that create technology, and I suspect email was among them, by default created something that tends towards non-essentialism. Or is created on non-essentialist premise, or if they're doing it by design because there's an enormous financial incentive to do it, which the idea of ignoring that, I think, is I don't know, I don't have the right language for it, but it cannot be ignored. You know, it's almost impossible to get anybody to believe a thing that they're paid not to believe. You know, it's hard to do it. But this is my idea, and I wonder, this is like the thought experiment to me is what is the conversation we're having, is this like straightening deck chairs on the Titanic? You know, is the system so non-essentialist, so sophisticated in its ability to adapt to the preferences of the person? And I would definitely put YouTube at the top of this list. I think YouTube has an enormous benefits, that the amount that you can learn, you can learn anything from anyone effectively, pretty much for free, and the best teachers in the world that you can access. I mean, of course, I can make a case for the upside, the asymmetric benefits. I'm not a Luddite about technology, but the degree, you know, back to like the Sergey's original, don't be evil. I'm like, well, there's some evidence to show that they're not being serious enough about that, because there's so much incentive to keep creating technology that is hooking to an audience.
So what you're saying is that technological leaders need to read your books and listen to your podcast to understand the essential attitude.
I mean, they need to, I absolutely think that they need an essentialist type. I mean, that's funny the way that you kind of called me on that, but I think that they need an essentialist mindset. They need to because technology is an accelerator of the assumptions underneath it. And I don't trust technologists who are being paid enormous amounts to build non-essentialist systems, to build essentialist systems. I mean, I'm not saying they can't. I'm just saying it's pretty rare if you're being paid an enormous amount of money to hook people, to not hook people. You know, of course, any company that can find an addictive thing, you know, whether that's caffeine or whether it's alcohol or whether it's technology addiction, like it's a great system if you're just trying to make money from it. But I think we ought to look at it for what it is, which is not just all upside, but non-essentialist in its core.
I think that in my coaching and in my work and in my book, I think all of those places, I again give the personal tools. I think you can choose to focus on what you can do. You can choose to focus on what's going on out there. You can choose to focus on the storm. You can choose to focus on the umbrella. So all of my coaching has shown me that the umbrella can make a difference and is your point of control. And so that's where I choose to focus.
I like that. It's a great comment, and it's been a great conversation. Laura, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the podcast princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.